I know I advertised that we would do a Chanukah shiur. We'll do that on Wednesday. Although in retrospect, I'm glad that we're keeping Tmidim Kesidrum. Like, one of the major themes of Chanukah is definitely, you know, the preservation, particularly of intense, very intense and persistent Torah study. If you go through, like, particularly the language of the Rambam, where he talks about that the Yevanim, Malchus Yavan was Gazru Gezeros, they made decrees, they were Batlu Dasam, they tried to nullify the religion. But then, like, as if it's another thing, as like a separate category, that the Yevanim were Lohi Nicham Laasok B'toru V'mitzvos. And obviously that language of Laasok, such an important language, it doesn't just imply a superficial kind of relationship with Torah study, but it's an asek. It's something which you're entrenched in, you're involved in. It's no coincidence that that's the language that we use when it comes to the main Birchas HaMitzvah, Birchas HaTorah. But even already in the Al Hanisim, the idea that the Yevanim tried to lahashkicham Torah Secha, lahashkicham, like to make them forget it, to turn it into a relic, something that was historical only, and didn't have relevance, you know, in the present, on, you know, the modern world, is certainly part of the struggle between the Jews and the Greek forces, the idea of Tmidim, Kesidrum, and all that that implies. In a word, basically, like one of the essential pieces of the struggle was really that, you know, Greek and Chachma Yevanis, its attempt was to kind of level the playing field in all types of knowledge, that it was accessible, that man himself, as one philosopher said, describing the Greek philosophy, that man is the measure of all things. The world is something which begins from him, the intellect. He can perceive things, and the sublime, you know, in that human experience, like, is really what the pursuit of life, according to the Greek perspective, is all about. But where they fall short, and that is really what they tried to write off and write out, the idea of Torah and particularly Chukim. But part of the triumph, like, really is the fact that we immerse ourselves in Dvar Hashem, in Chachmas Hashem, that it is something that we can attain and apprehend, but it also is beyond us and outside of us, and we all understand that that's exactly what makes it so special and so great. It's that it's man's capacity to unite with Dvar Hashem, go outside of himself, because it really is a world whose center is God and not man, but that is itself the elevating factor. So it's significant just on that. Maybe that was, you know, our Chanukah shir, but it's significant just from that perspective. There's like a minhag in YU in the yeshiva that, you know, the Chevre HaKola won't light at the Zman, but they'll wait. We'll wait till after Seder. Seder ends at 6:30. It's much later. Forget about Shkia. It's much later than Seis, you know, nowadays. But Rav Lichtenstein, when he was the Rosh Kolel, now Rav Shechter is the Rosh Kolel, after Rav Lichtenstein made Aliyah, when Rav Aaron was the Rosh Kolel, he approached the Rav and asked him, like, what he should do. And the Rav referred to the Me'iri, who quotes the Minhag of Bnei HaYeshiva, to wait until after. They shouldn't disrupt their Torah studies, basically, to light Neiros Chanukah. So if that's the case about the Etzem Chiyuv Hadlaka, like, it's certainly true, you know, about the Divrei Torah being focused and not getting too far afield. And there is a time for Nyanei Chanukah, but it shouldn't necessarily come at the cost of the regular limud. So enough said. You know, I don't want to undermine the point that I was trying to make by spending too much time, like, on the Chanukah stuff. But last time we let off, we were discussing the topic of Sharshifa. And the last thing we discussed is basically the view of the Rishonim, who seem to understand the sugya as basically ultimately concluding in a something with implications for Hezek Re'iyah. In other words, like, to distill it, there was a Havamina that what we were dealing with was Midas Sidon, that a window higher than 4 amos could serve no benefit to the owner of the Chatzer, in which case his ability to protest could only be Midas Sidon Shali Shali V'Shalcha Shalcha. But then the Gemara turned around and said, no, it's not Midas Sidom. There's really Hezek Re'iyah here. It might be a little bit more of a far-out Hezek Re'iyah, but it is Hezek Re'iyah nonetheless, and that, in fact, is the sheet that we paskin like, Rabbi Ilah, you can protest, because it is not Midas Sidom. Instead, it is hezek re'iya. And we pointed out that Rabbi Zeira, who's cholek, that the Baal HaChatzer cannot protest, could argue for several reasons, but one of them could just be that he doesn't agree that this is really a hezek re'iya problem, given the fact that it is a little bit of a stretch. It isn't typical your typical case of hezek re'iya. Everyone with me so far? But the consequences kind of that interpretation of the Gemara was what? And this is something all the Rishonim had to deal with. Reading the Gemara sof kol sof, like the sheet that we pass on Garbilah, that it's a hezek re'iya problem, results in what broader question, let's say, that they all ask?
Are you talking about Shershifa by Chatzer? Why don't we ask the same question?
Exactly. If this really is hezek re'iya, then we should anticipate that, Isaac. We should anticipate, if this is really crosses the threshold for what's considered to be hezek re'iya, we'd anticipate to find it in other cases. One of those cases, like you said, I just don't want to narrow because it really should be true about hezek re'iya in general. Wherever there's some concern, we need to ask why there is a hezek re'iya concern in one place, but there isn't in another. If all things being equal, we're choshishin, dilma motzus sharshifa, totach v'kiyamta v'kachazis. And then they all gave their different answers. That was what we discussed last time. We don't need to prosecute it any further. But the ksos, he kind of says, b'mechilas kavod harav, ilule divrei haramban, and all those other rishonim, as well, there's a much simpler way of reading this whole sugya. And don't be mistaken, it's a totally different way of reading the sugya. The ksos doesn't say it in exactly this way, but what he really means to say is as follows. In the Hava Mina, there was a debate whether we're kofin al midas sodom or not. And it was dealing, at that point, with something basically just midas sodom. In other words, for Rabbi Ilaa, the owner of the chatzer did not lose out at all. In other words, zeh lo chaser. And yet, he has the right to protest. That could only be because, yes, kofin al midas sodom. When the Gemara turns around and says, no, everybody agrees that kofin al midas sodom, it's saying as follows. Not that there is actually hezek re'iya in our case, which is why the Baal HaChatzer can protest. And obviously, that's not going to be midas sodom. So therefore, you can be kofin, because you can be kofin for any hezek re'iya problem, as we know. But it's just not midas sodom. In other words, to qualify for midas sodom, it needs to be that there is zero benefit for the person protesting. If there is zero benefit, then his protest is seen as an act of sodom and kofin al midas sodom. But as long as, in the language of the ketzos, chaser ktsas, either from his perspective or from some perspective, whoever determines that, there is some kind of loss, it is no longer midas sodom. And Rabbi Law is basically saying that because Dilma Moses Sharshifa, that's not a hezek re'iya problem. That wouldn't qualify for hezek re'iya. After all, it's only a suffix hezek re'iya. But it will put it over the point to turn what was originally Midas Sodom and makes it into not Midas Sodom. Chaser Ktsas is the language of the Ktsos. And apparently Rabbi Zeira disagrees. The consequences of that, says the Ktsos, is that you no longer have any questions from any other places in Shas that deal with hezek re'iya. Why is that? Yeah, Isaac? Well, let's try to figure it out. If we're not saying that Sharshifa is a potential hezek re'iya problem, Okay. So then it isn't going to be a hezek re'iya problem across the board. Let's take our case of Chatzer, for example. The halacha requires that if partners are building a wall in their property, neighbors, they have to only build the wall up to 4 amos. But if Reuven wants to force Shimon to build it higher to 8, he can't. But what about the fact that I may take a stool and look over the 4-amo wall? So he says, that's not a legitimate taina. There is no hezek re'iya of Sharshifa. So the only reason that one can force the other would be because of midas sodom. But here, let's just think about what's happening. If Shimon has his way and forces Reuven to help him build a higher wall, so Reuven may cause hezek ria to Shimon, or whatever. It may cause, you know, let's say Shimon is nehene. Let's say, for example, Shimon would be nehene from having a higher protection, a higher wall that protects him from Reuven. But Reuven is chaser tremendously, because Reuven now needs to contribute much more money to building this wall. So if there isn't really hezek ria, it's just something, it's a ha'ana, let's say, for Shimon, then Reuven can make the taina that he shouldn't have to pay for that hana, that supposed hana of Sharshifa for Shimon. In other words, the whole calculation gets thrown off the second you think that Sharshifa doesn't really constitute hezek ria, but is only the basis, in our case, for Rabbi Ilah saying the Baal HaChatzar can force the Baal HaCholam, because he is Chatzar. He's being Chatzar by, because of the Sharshifa. Yeah.
Just to clarify, so the Ketzos is saying that Sharshifa, just because it's not Midas Sodom, it doesn't mean it is Hezek Ria.
Exactly. It's not Midas Sodom, but that's not Hezek Ria. So therefore, each case needs to be assessed differently. We have to look at the two sides. Are we dealing with a case of Zeh Nenev, Zeh Lo Chaser? Or are we dealing with a case of Zeh Nenev, Zeh Chaser? Limaskana, Rabbi Law is saying, this is a case of Zeh Nenev from the window. And Zeh Chaser, Ktas, but Chaser nonetheless, because he's afraid of the Sharshifa. He's afraid that he really is losing out. Now again, you want to know if, like, you know, how far you take that. Like, what if he's just paranoid? If he's a paranoid person, like, can he basically, is that considered Chaser too? Okay, we have to wonder that. Maybe anything less than like extreme paranoia, you know, clinically, you know, let's say whatever, clinically considered, you know, paranoia, maybe that would be considered chaser. But if that's the case, then you have to go through all the different scenarios. And certainly in the case of a wall, neither Reuven nor Shimon have a taina against the other. Because this guy's worried about the Shashifa, but the other guy's worried about losing money from his bank account to dish out more money for the wall. And that, therefore, we're not going to force him to build a wall higher than four amos if it's not hezek ria. Yeah, questions.
If you take it out of the category of hezek ria, and now it's a case of zen and it's a chaser tzas, why would you not have a problem in a chaser? I just don't think I got that point.
Yeah. So
if you build the sharshifa in a chaser.
So let's say like this. Let's say you have Reuven and Shimon, right?
Yeah.
So Reuven's worried about the sharshifa,
okay,
right? So that taina of Reuven is going to be the only thing that allows him to ask Shimon to do what?
Build it higher.
But building it higher comes at a cost.
Oh,
it kind of works in the other way.
Why can't you set up the kids like that by the window?
How would you do that?
Force you to close up the window. You have to pay for that.
I don't know if you have to. Yeah, I don't think you have to pay so much for that.
Oh, so just an insidious thing.
Yeah. But I think you're right. Meaning, if we would, if like you would have to.
All the sheet does that took in and made it a hezek ria problem. You gave an answer that had to do with hezek ria, why a chotzer is different than a window.
Right.
But for this sheet, if you now say that it's really just about a case of zeh nenev zeh chaser, then it should be even more global. The question's even stronger.
No, I mean the question's not stronger. It's really weaker because you have to be able to find cases where it really
doesn't have
right, but there's some. But the point is that here there is chesronos.
No, but you can make.
Let me say it like this: if it was there was a hezek ria problem,
it's a bigger,
we would force Shimon to pay out, because for hezek ria you're forced to pay out, but you're not forced to pay out because someone doesn't want you to look over. You know, it feels like he's losing out. He's you know, he's low. He's chaser. Because of your potential, you know, bench, you know, ventures. Or you just have to look basically in each case and basically like ask what you have on both sides. Did anybody understand the Ksos differently? Like, that's how I understood the Ksos.
I didn't see exactly.
Yeah?
I have a clarifying question. Would the Ksos say that if you pulled up a Sharshifa and looked over the wall, it wouldn't be hezek ria?
No, that would, because that's Vada hezek ria.
So then you just said that there's not enough.
But the potential for Sharshifa itself isn't a reason to require a high.
He's not using the love as far as the earlier, like
Vishonu.
No.
For them, this is hezek ria. A suffix hezek ria is hezek ria.
So what's his logic if he's not before the Sharshifa?
just to see as people don't
do. No, he doesn't need to. The fact that it's a suffix is not enough to be considered real hazagriya.
So then why should it fit as a window?
It's not. It's just that the details of the case are different. When it comes to the window case, you have one guy benefiting and the other guy, we're not sure whether he's losing out or not. What tips the scales and can makes him considered to be losing out is this concern of Sharshifa. That makes it not lo chaser, but chaser ktas. But in the case of chaser, right, the two sides have equal tainas. One guy has the taina of Sharshifa, fine. But the other guy has the taina that you're going to make me pay money, and I don't want to do that. Which, if we're only dealing with, is something that's not, that's just like something that someone's bothered by or worried about, and it doesn't reach the point of being considered hezek riyah shmei hezek.
Right, but had he actually brought up Sharshifa and done it, then he could.
Yeah, that would be a problem.
But then you can force it to build a wall higher.
I don't know about that. That's an interesting, more technical question.
That's agree at that point.
Right, I don't know if that's so much about, I don't know what you can do in terms of forcing him to build the wall, but you can definitely tell him to get, you know, get down from looking over at you.
Yeah.
Okay. Everyone clear, kind of? It's a little bit confusing, but not so confusing. Basically, once we're out of the world of Hezek Re'iyah, the ability to coerce, you know, kind of becomes a much more amorphous or case by case.
Well, it's just that the answer becomes more of a tzias based rather than a svara.
Right, exactly. That's how the Ksos reads the sugya. If that's the case, then when we go back to the Gemara and Mentes, we basically have a Hava Mina that we were initially dealing with was Midas Sedom, Kamash Malan, that it is not Midas Sedom, basically. Let's say within Rabbi Ilah. Rabbi Ilah initially said, it is Midas Sedom, but I don't care, Kofin. Ain't Kofin on Midas Sedom. But then he turned around the Maskana and said, we are Kofin, but this is not Midas Sedom. Now that's significant, basically, for the following reason. When we think about Midas Sedom, and this is like one of the big fundamental questions of Midas Sedom, are we to assume that the idea of Midas Sedom is that as long as I'm losing something, then I'm not a terrible guy, I'm not in violation of Midas Sedom, forcing him, you know, kind of to get off my lawn? Or is the question itself of what we consider a loss also part of the question of Kofin Asal Midas Sedom? In other words, just because someone perceives or it is possible to look at this situation as a loss, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not Midas Sedom. In other words, there's one very narrow way, one very black and white way to think about the whole Midas Sedom question. All things being equal, the classic case of Zenen and Vizelo Chaser is one guy's actually benefiting and the other guy's losing nothing. That's Midas Sedom. That's clear. Right? Everyone there, let's say, will say Kofin. So what's that? That's the classic case. The classic case is the Gemara Baba Kama on Daf Chaf Amud Aleph, where basically at the end, at the bottom of Chaf Amud Aleph, to the, you know, top, to the first two words on Chaf Amud Beis, there's a case basically where you have a guy who owns a property, a landlord. The landlord doesn't rent out that property at all. And someone comes along who usually rents, he's someone who jumps from hostel to hostel. Maybe he's on, you know, whatever, Sulam or Machaf. And he usually, but he realizes the landlord is kind of not having a tight watch over his property. So he stays in this property that, again, is not used for being rented out. It's not on, you know, Zillow or whatever, all these websites. And therefore, you know, that's a case where basically this guy who's living there is being nana because he usually has to pay to find a place to dwell. But the other guy's lochaser because he literally wouldn't use this for anything else. So the Gemara wonders, what should be the din? Should the guy who owns the property be able to say, well, let me say it the other way. Should the guy who's inhabiting the property say, you know, lo chisarticha, I haven't caused you any loss? Or should the other guy be able to say to him, well, you know, ha is hanisa, you benefited from me. That is the prototypical case of zeh nehaneh, v'zeh lo chaser, because he wouldn't have otherwise made a buck off of this property. And the other guy is really benefiting because he would have otherwise had to, you know, pay for a place to live. That is, all things being equal, we usually say zeh nehaneh v'zeh lo chaser, we paskin, that you don't have to pay. In that case, he lived there, he didn't have to pay, he doesn't have to pay him afterwards. But that again is where it's clear there is no way to look at what the landlord is suffering as a loss. He does not lose out at all. There is no suffix. Lo chaser klum. So is the idea basically that whenever then there is any chaser, you know, he's okay, he's justified. No longer do we say kofin, he's justified because he's suffering a loss. Or is there a certain type of loss that qualifies for not being midas sedom? A certain loss that constitutes a legitimate loss, but there are still nevertheless losses, chaser ktsases, if you will, that still fall under the rubric of midas sedom. In other words, even if they're still some kind of loss. In other words, in our Gemara, we had a Havamina that this is Midas Sedom. Many of the Rishonim already read the Maskana into the Havamina. We always know that the guy could bring a Sharshifa along, but in the Havamina, the Gemara assumed, even though, technically speaking, there could be some loss, there could be some, you know, consequence, you know, called, you know, coming to the owner of the Chatzer, but that's not enough. That's Midas Sedom. Kamash Shalom, we turn around, according to Ksos at least, and say, no, Chaser Ktsas is not Midas Sedom. Does everyone understand what I'm asking? I'm asking in a general sense whether we're supposed to look at all losses. You know, basically it's 0 or 100. Either it is some kind of loss and therefore not Midas Sedom, or it's no loss and Midas Sedom. Or do we say that there's even kind of like a more ambiguous gray area of things that some might consider a significant loss and therefore, you know, not kofin, or it's not midas sedom, and others will say no, that loss is insignificant, even though it is albeit a loss, but it's a loss will force you to give up on. It's a loss will force you to give into. That's a very interesting way of thinking about the question of midas sedom. What is considered midas sedom, basically? Is it only the things which you stand to gain nothing and you're just a rasha? Or it's even things where, like, you're not necessarily the worst guy in the world. You have a point. You feel like you're being harmed. And it's open to question whether or not it's legitimate. It's a legitimate ask. Maybe that could be midas sedom too. And then it becomes a really complicated question, which is to go through all the cases that are more in the middle. Where on the one end it seems to be chaser tzas, chaser, but the other end it's like tzas. How legitimate is this taina that you have? The way that Tzos understands it basically is that in the Havamina, chaser tzas is still midas sedom, but the maskana, no, it's not midas sedom. Yeah, Joey.
It's not a great parallel, but I think there's a certain category of, like, think about, like, a police officer who decides to, like, give you a ticket for jaywalking. Like, it's like a small infraction that most people would lift their eyes over. And, like, if you're, like, have a real, like, a small chaser, you don't really, like, think, and you decide to go and force your neighbor to take care of it. Like, couldn't you also do that? I mean, that's not, like, something that most people should be like, it's okay. But, like, the fact that you're willing to go above and beyond to, like, force the guy to build that thing, even if there is somewhat of a chaser, it's just very small. Like, it also
right. Passed down, no? 100%. So the Tzos doesn't think that, Lamaskana, because we paskan the Rebbe Ilah. But the question is, basically, did everyone agree with the Tzos, number one? And number two, what about other cases? This becomes probably, like, one of the most interesting questions. It's probably like Maisim B'chol Yom. Like, let me give you some example. I'll give you one example. You know, you guys are, I know a lot of you, you know, are, you know, are in math and sciences. At some point, you know, I, at least for sure in college, you have to get a calculator. Expensive calculator, you know? And someone needs it for a test. You have this calculator, they really need it. And I don't think this would happen to anybody here, but you know he has his hands are a little bit oily, or maybe he is not so careful with some of his things. He's careful, but, like, whatever, you don't know him to be the most careful guy in the world. And he asks you to borrow the calculator. And you think maybe he'll press the buttons too hard, who knows what he'll do. So it could be, this guy needs it for a test. Zenene, mamish, legamri. I mean, this is Kuach Nefesh. But for the other guy, lo chaser. He's not really losing out. Again. Again, I'm glad that it's triggering. This is kind of what I'm trying to, like, test a little bit. Like, if, to the extent, let me be clear, to the extent that you're actually damaging, the guy is really careless,
or
he really will damage the calculator, that's, you're right. maybe that's chaser. But from another perspective, like maybe our problem is like that we even think this should be chaser. This is not chaser. You are not losing out. Financially speaking, you'll be fine. And you know, another example is a good one. You have an apartment. Three people can stay in. And one guy comes to you really desperate. He says, like, I need a place to stay. You like the guy, you're not sure. And you come up with all these reasons in your mind why this is, like, not fair to the other guys. Maybe it's even a case where, like, people paid you to stay there. And I feel bad, da-da-da. Again, to the extent that you can really prove some kind of financial or legal loss, then that's totally fine. But to what extent, like, is this really, like, you really don't want it to stay there. Maybe you're concerned about how it will impact the other people. But you should look yourself in the mirror and wonder, like, is this really justifiable? Is it fair for me to have this hakpada?
So this is something that's annoying, but at the end of the day, truly well.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a certain level of annoyance that, like, you feel like you can't tolerate and you should be mocha on. So but the question is, like, what?
Does that mean that's no or not?
That's exactly our question. It's exactly. And this, you could imagine, is, like, really probably what happens the most. Like, very rarely do you have a case where it's, like, so clearly, you know, low chaser at all. Usually, like, a lot of the cases that you have, you'll come up in halacha l'maisa, will be kind of this, like, in between. And in addition to figuring out what legal rights there are, you also have to figure out, in terms of the Midas Sodom questions, what kind of rights there are there. So I just want to quickly turn. I'm just going to do, there are a couple of Gemaras, like six Gemaras about Midas Sodom. Three of them happen to be appearing in Bava Basra. I actually don't think that that's a coincidence. I'll explain what I mean, hopefully by the end. But just to take one Gemara, maybe we'll try to do two quickly for examples. I think the other two Gemaras are much clearer that this is what's being tested. Not, you know, whether or not we're kofen or not kofen on Midas Sodom, but like what really is the Hagdara? What makes something Midas Sodom? And maybe what to one person isn't Midas Sodom really is to another. Yes, Midas Sodom. This is not only Machlokes Tanaim Amorayim, but it seems to me maybe even a Machlokes Rishonim. The Gemara on Yud Beis and Mabeis, if people can turn to Yud Beis and Mabeis, basically records the case, several cases where Midas Sodom is called into question. If you go a couple of lines down from the bottom, these have not been opened. So the Gemara says, about, I would say, like 10 lines down from the bottom. Hahu dezavin, it's the first word on the line, are people with Hahu dezavin? Ara amitra debe nasha. It's like 10 lines from the bottom. Yud beis and beis. Hahu dezavin ara amitra. Yeah, got everyone? 10 lines up from the bottom.
Oh.
Yeah, like around 10. I'm like guessing. Yeah, so the Gemara says, Ahud Zavan Ara Mitzvah Debe Nasha. Someone bought, basically there's a family with four kids. So one of them bought, I'm just going to make it simple, one of them bought a property near the big property of his father. Note, as background, there's a halacha called Dina de Bar Metzra, that when someone's selling a property, and they could either sell it to their neighbor or to some other random person who lives somewhere else, that there's a schus kedima to the person who has an adjacent property, because he really benefits, it kind of touches on our question. He benefits from having two adjoining properties, whereas the other one, it doesn't really. So that extra zechus gives him a zechus kedima in the mechira. That there's a commandment, actually, v'asisa yashar v'atov, at least midir rabbanan, if not more, that the seller needs to sell it to his neighbor, who's going to have now the benefit of bar metzra, of having adjoining properties, rather than some other third party. So, unfortunately, the guy's father dies. And now this big property, this estate, is being divided up to all the brothers. So the guy basically says, Kika palgu amarle, pligu amitzrayim. He basically says, give me a section of this estate that's near the property that I have next to our father's property. Because he benefits greatly from now having adjoining properties. They're all going to get a quarter of the estate. So he just wants that his quarter should be the section that's adjacent to his property. So says Rabba, Amar Rabba, Kigon Zeh Kofen Amidas Sodom. Right? None of them are losing financially. It's all the same property. Or so it seems. This is where the Rishonim have different interpretations. And it's very important actually for what we're talking about. I just won't go into it now. You know, our question from the test Amud Aleph, and so it may even be a question, Machlokes Rishonim, but it sounds like on the surface nobody has anything to lose, so we should give that side of the property to this guy. Says Rabbi Yosef, and it's actually interesting that that the Ein Mishpat, Ner Mitzvah, seems to quote, put like a letter on Kigon Zeh. Because in a minute the Gemara says, Maskev la Rabbi Yosef, and it also puts a dollar there, Amri le, Ache ma'alina la'ilave ki nifse debe bar Maryam. It says, no. We are losing something out from you having the property next to us. From you taking that property which is near you. Because this to us is like the property of Nichse de Bar Merion. Bar Merion was a very wealthy person, he had very good estates, and he wouldn't sell his property because it was extremely valuable, you know, the children of Merion, except for a very, very, very high price. So they say, this is invaluable, this section of the property, so it isn't really Midas Sodom, because we are losing out, they can say to him. And Rashi here says they're losing out because there is something actually beneficial. Who knows, sometimes in properties that require rain, sometimes different parts of the property maybe get rained better. So they can argue, oh, you know, the rain's better here sometimes. So like Rashi makes the Ukimta, because like why should, let's just take a step back. Who's really in the right here? Rabbi says this is Midas Sodom. The adjacent property brother, owner, should get this side of the field. And the brother's saying, no, this is to us, this is invaluable property. So Rabbi says, this is Midas Sodom, and Rabbi Yosef says, no. And the Hilchasa, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yosef. Even though it's funny, like I said, it sounds like the Rambam Paschim like both. Like, how does that happen? So there's some confusion as to what the Metzias of the case is here. Are the other brothers really losing out or not? This is exactly our question. If you don't make the Ukimta, that there is actually something inherently more valuable to this side of the field, then we're basically wondering, in that subtle gray area, like, can people make a claim that doesn't seem to be so clearly justified? From their perspective, it's like an invaluable property. When for the other guy, there's a clear objective benefit, zeh nehneh, and it's unclear if zeh chaser or lo chaser. This Gemara of Kofin Amida Sedom is not asking whether we are Kofin or not Kofin, but is asking what is the threshold to be considered Midas Sedom? And is this Midas Sedom? Rabbi says it is. Rabbi Yosef says it's not. Obviously, question number one is what's the Metzias here? But question number two is, after we establish what the Metzias is, are they really losing?
The problem is for anything you're not, especially in cases like this, is you're not going to be able to really, there's nothing that's going to be definitive that
objective loss.
Yeah,
except the case I told you.
But that's the one example of a million that you
can. Right. So the question is going through each one of these, though, and saying, well, according to which Tanoim Amoraim, according to which Rishonim, what's their line? Like, where do they draw their line? That this can no longer be tolerated. This is Midas Sodom. And where do they say, you know, that's a good point. He's within his rights.
It's all subjective.
It can't be subjective, because we have to pass it in the halacha. So the question is, where does the subjectivity get a halachic expression? Do we give credence to it? Again, I'm running through the case, so there's another case, basically, in the Gemara. Same kind of situation, where there are two properties, two estates, and they're both of the estates are by rivers. It just so happens to be that one of them is close by, is an adjacent property to one of the two brothers. So two brothers, two estates that are, you know, bound to be inherited, both of them are by rivers. The rivers are very important for irrigation. So they both have rivers. The one guy says, I want the one that's closer to that's next to my property, Dina de Bar Metzra. It's advantageous to me to have adjacent properties, touching properties. So Rabbi says again, Kigon Zeh Kovin Amidas Sodom. We let him get that property and we force the other brother to allow him to have it. And Rav Yosef responds right back again, no. Because he can say that maybe sometimes that river will flow over, you know, and benefit the property next to it better than the other one. So we should divide up. I get half of this property by the river, and you get, you know, and half of the other one, and we split everything 50-50. But then there's one final case where even Rav Yosef concedes is Midas Sodom. Again, you should look at this Gemara when you have a chance. But basically where the case is, that you have, the Gemara says you have a case at the very end, Tarti, I don't know this girsa here. Atrei nagra. So Rav Yosef says, "Kigon zeh kofen amida asedon." Where you have one river, and then you have his property, I don't know how to like show this out, but basically you have a river and two properties. So you have a river and then one property on this side of the river, one property on the other side of the river. So the one of the brothers already has a property touching one of the two properties. So the question is, can he get the property touching his? Rav Yosef says, "Kigon ze kofen amida asedom." They both have access to the same exact river, and this guy, one of the brothers, benefits greatly from inheriting the property next to the river that's also next to his. But Maskev Abaye responds, he says, "No, the other brother is a taina. He wants to have the one in the middle, so that he's blocked in by one property on the left side, let's say, or whatever, one property on one side." The property now that he gets, the river, and then the brother is going to get the other property. So if he has now this protection, extra sharecroppers, protection from both sides, he's going to taina, you know, that's why I want my brother to get the other property. So there we say, no, kigon zeh, kofen amida asedom. He doesn't have a taina that he should get this property and the other guy and his brother should lose, you know, the dina de bar mitzvah, so that he's blocked in better, you know, by his shomrim, his guardians, and he gets that extra protection. Because you don't have a right to argue for protection. Basically, in all these cases, there's also another case on Kufsa Meches, but basically, like, in all these cases, what we're basically wondering is whether Midas Sodom is simply a question of Lo Chaser Klum and Chaser Tzas is good enough, or whether there are certain types of Chasers that qualify, and certain types of Chasers that we consider, you know, lo chaser klum. Even though from his perspective, or from some perspective, some legal perspective, there is some taina. But before, in order to explain where all this is coming from, we should just take a step back, a little bit above the fray, and outside of all the nitty-gritties, to understand what we're dealing with, what the principle of kofen amida sedom is. And I think once we just make a comment about that and try to get to the core of what we mean when we say kofen almidas sedom, I think that will help us understand much better the significance of this debate, the significance of what we consider to be a loss. And there being certain losses that are not considered midas sedom, and others that, even though you do feel like you're losing, are still considered midas sedom. Yeah, Erez.
Yeah, I'll just ask quickly and just keep in mind you have to answer it now, but we're saying that the Tos point is about quantity, right? And so it says that the chaser tzas is going to be the
top. Right.
But to me, it also seems like something that so says it doesn't seem to come elsewhere is that he's talking about, right, the chisaron for the tzos is the fear of sharshifa, right?
Right.
Whereas, like, these other cases, like the oily calculator, you could say, okay, it's a fear that maybe because this guy is, like, he's reckless, he's negligent, that he will, like, and that's the chisaron. But like the actual, like getting my calculator oily or having more flow out of the river, these are things that are more objective than like the fear of sharshifa.
Right.
So is anyone else agree with Ketos on that? Like, is Ketos in Indian just about chaser tzah, or it's also about this like fear? That, like the fear of something happening is in and of itself like, sorry.
Uh-huh. Well, the Ketos seems to be saying, right, kind of it is. He's like going a little bit further.
Right.
He's saying like anything basically not, you know, lo chaser klum is not going to be midas sedom.
Right, it's not just an Indian in it's quantity. Like, it is, it's just a chaser.
No, I understand. The question though, if those are really quantitative things either. Like, is the taina that these properties are like nichsei debar merion to me actually a quantitative argument? Right. You have to see, right. Like, if they just say, I like how it looks better. Okay, I don't know, you know. That's like extremely subjective.
Yeah.
So what you need to, what I'm trying to like give you guys all the, I guess, the ability to do is kind of to look through, to gather a list of cases in Shas. Again, I put some on the Makoros. They're not that many. But then really the post-game, they're showing blow it up, you know, to try to identify if there is any Hagdara, you know, for what we consider to be Midas. Now, why is it all this significant? We'll get back to our immediate question in a minute, because that is why we're doing this. But let's really just step back, blank slate, for just a couple of minutes, and this is what we'll conclude with. You know, what is all this? What is the principle? I think it's important. I think it's an important topic. I think it's also an important Bava Basra topic, as I'll explain, you know, in light of things we have said already about the limit of Bava Basra. You know, what is Kovan Amidas Adom? On the surface, well, what's Kovan Amidas Adom? Well, tell it to me. What is it? Translate. That you can basically force people to not be, you know, extremely cruel.
Right?
Midas Sodom, you're a Sodomite. Sodom was destroyed. Sodom and Amora. They were really the only time since the Mabel. On the surface, which opinion to you makes the most sense? We only in two places, on Nentes, and also on Kuf Samaches, which we didn't see, unfortunately, just because of time. But they're only in two places that the Gemara actually recorded debate about it. For the most part, we seem to accept Kofan Amidas Sodom. Well, maybe I just gave it away. But on the surface, like, what would you say? Kofin or ain't kofin? Say kofin. Because the truth is, you know, this is Midas Sodom after all. It's a terrible thing. We don't tolerate it at all. We can't stand for it. We should force people kind of to overcome their Midas Sodom, you know, proclivity for the sake of a more greater altruistic, you know, sort of outlook on the world. A more giving, a more selfless, just a little bit less about the self, to be honest. We're not asking for that much. To not be Midas Sodom. And indeed, that is the thrust of one of the Ritva's comments on Nentes. It can't be, he denies the fact that there ever was a stage where someone said, Kofen on Midas Sodom. You can look there for how exactly he explains that. But the truth is, upon further analysis, the opposite is true. The more difficult Shita is not the Shita that says, Ein Kofen on Midas Sodom, but is actually the Shita that says, Kofen. Amidas, and that we force people in Dine Mamanus to get to overcome their nature, to overcome their Mida, in order and to pay out for that in court and in Choshe Mishpat. To explain what I mean by that, the problem really is in Kofin, but it's also in the definition of Midas Sodom. The Mishnah Avos, to explain that, let's just identify what exactly Midas Sodom is. The Mishnah Avos, Perakei Mishnah Yud, basically says, Arba midos ba'adam. There are four midos ba'adam. Ha'omer sheli sheli, v'shalcha shalcha. One who says what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours. Zo mida beinonis. This is just a very median, good Samaritan, regular, you know, yid. He respects the property of himself and also of the other person. V'yesh omrim, a very rare appearance in Mishnaic and Talmudic literature. We find Yesh Omrim in Shulchan Aruch all the time. But the idea of like Yesh Omrim, there are those that say, maybe some might say, maybe Yesh Omrim, some might say, Zo Midas Sodom. So there's the debate whether Shali Shali or Shalcha Shalcha is even Midas Sodom in the first place. Maybe it's Midas Benonis. What is the problem after all with being someone who says, what's mine is mine, respect that, and I'll respect what's yours is yours? If we continue reading in the Mishnah, there are many worse midos. There's one particularly worse midah than midas sedom. Maybe two. Shali shalcha, what's mine is yours. V'shalcha shali, and what's yours is mine. Am haaretz. The guy has no clue what's going on. There's no rule. There's no ideas of property lines or boundaries. The world is basically just tohu vavohu. No one knows what's going on. That's an am haaretz. But shali shalcha. V'shalcha shalcha, what's mine is yours and what's yours is yours, chassid. Of course, he's someone who's extremely giving. But shali shali, what's mine is mine, v'shalcha shali, and what's yours is mine, Russia. So note, there's a difference between Russia and Midas Sodom. The worst Midah is for sure Russia. Again, that's Gezela, basically. What's yours is mine. He doesn't, not even within his rights. And when it comes to shali shali, v'shalcha shalcha, the initial, the stam, the Tanakama, if you will, is Midah Benonis. It's a regular, standard, you know, Joe Schmo. Has no problems with the world. Maybe gives tzedakah on occasion. Shali shali v'shalcha shalcha. And yesh omrim, that what was for one da'deya, mida benonis, is for another, mida sedom. For this reason exactly, the Rabbi Yonah is extremely bothered. He doesn't understand how there could be a shita that argues one side being Mida Benonis and the other side Mida Sodom. Sodom was a terrible, you know, cruel, you know, rotten to its very core. The fact that you can share the same Shita Mida Sedom and Mida Beinonis is very striking. So now let me just go back for a minute, very quickly, to the Gemara, Kofin al Midas Sedom. To the extent that Midas Sedom was this extremely toxic, terrible, intolerable Mida, then it would be one thing to say we can force someone in the world of Midos to pay money. Midos are very important, but they're mostly Bein Adam Lemakom. Even if they're Bein Adam Lechavero, they're Bein Adam Lechavero vis-a-vis Bein Adam Lemakom. You have a right and responsibility to be a good person. That doesn't mean that the court can force you to do that. Societies can't demand of their people. Again, you have to tell our friends, our Muslim friends, the same thing. But you know, you can't. Halacha doesn't believe that you can force people in financially to act a certain way. So it would be one thing if we said kofin, again, when the midah was like, you know, gezela, it was midas harasha shali v'shalcha shali. But it's another thing to say that we force someone in dine mavanus for a midah, I'll say, that may just be midah beinonis. That is just a regular guy trying to live his life, live a good life, live a life, you know, a respectable and honorable life. He does his mind his own business. Maybe, like I said, gives a little charity here and there out of Yira Shemayim. But to say kofin on that midah, the idea that we're kofin per se and on a midah, which to begin with, hard to even understand why we call that midah Sodom. It's a very surprising view, actually, in the end, to say the shita of kofin al midas Sodom, and rather than saying that the problematic shita is in kofin al midas Sodom. So, how do we make sense of all of this? How do we make sense of this kind of this dialectic that it's not as bad of a midah, but yet it's the single midah about which we say kofin? How are we supposed to understand all of that? So just to explain it, the Tosefta in Maseches Sota gives an explanation of what really, how to perceive this very subtle, I'm not going to argue, character flaw of Midas Sodom. Anshei Sodom, the Gemara says, Lo nisga'u lifnei hamakom ela mitoch hatova sheyishbi alahem. Sodom only sinned because of the gaiva, the pride they developed from the goodness that the Ribono Shel Olam gave them. Shenemar eretz mimena yatza lechem. It's a land from which bread shoots forth. Makom sefir avaneha, beautiful stones. Nisiv lo yedu eit, v'chulei. Hoil, the next. Umazon yotze me'artzenu, v'kesev izav yotze me'artzenu, v'avanim tovu sumargolios yotze me'artzenu. They all said, in anu tzrichin, we don't want people coming here and joining us. Sheyavo b'nei adam aleinu. Because they're only going to come lechasreinu, so na'amod v'nishkach es harega, we're going to stand up and get a race, wipe out any foot from trespassing on our property. Amar lahem hamakom b'tova shehishpati lachem, I gave you such goodness in your life. Atem mishachin es harega mibeinechem, ani eshkach etchem min ha'olam. If you're not going to let people enjoy what I gave you to enjoy, then you do not deserve to live on the land that I gave you. It was the pride per se, the possessiveness per se, that made it all the more terrible. One perspective of Midas Sodom is basically to say that it's a question of cruelty. Someone who stands nothing to gain and yet is willing to cause someone else, you know, a loss where they could have gained, that could have been one way to perceive the whole problem of Midas Sodom. And if that's all it is, it's just a Midah of Midah Ra, a Rishus, that the other guy could benefit and you lose nothing, then it's possible that if you were losing something, we wouldn't consider it to be so intolerable. We wouldn't say kofim. We wouldn't say that's Midas Sodom. But the more you think that actually the problem of Midas Sodom is not Midah Ra'a per se, it's just cruelty for the sake of cruelty, but is being territorial, is being, you know, predatorial about the things you own, is having an inflated sense of ownership, then you make gufa say that in dafka, in the places where you think you have a right, where you're chaser ktsas, where you perceive some problem, you think that you're being undermined, maybe that's gufa where we say kofin osa midas sedom. The agenda of midas sedom, of kofin, that we employ that, when we typically don't employ it anywhere else, is to try to train people and teach people to be a little bit more understanding of ownership, of property. Not only to understand that the Ribono Shel Olam gives them everything, and that nothing really is theirs, but more than that. That it's a problem per se to be over-territorial, to think that you own and have rights more than you really do. So it's specifically, maybe there might be cases where chaser tzas, oh well, I'm worried about him bringing a sharshifa nearby. Okay, you're not being cruel, you really do think there's a problem, but the whole point is that this starts out as a midah beinonis. You think all you're doing is asking for something that you think you deserve, but then so slowly it erodes and turns into something where you take more and more and more. And you don't want to have anyone else enjoying the things that you have. And you have, like I say, this inflated sense of ownership, of territory, as if it's mine, 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 that in theory is objectively just a midah beinonis, but can turn into the worst kinds of problems. And it's gufa there where we force you, because you don't understand, because it's not rishas, it's not gezela. We force you because you need to be taught. We force you because the line between a midah beinonis and yesh omer midah sedom is so subtle. And exercising that koach, and us telling you not to be so, even if you may have a taina, is exactly the point of midah sedom. From that perspective, it's a totally different question. Teaching people, basically, to develop the midah of vatranut, which is a very, very just important midah in and of itself. And I think in closing, sorry for going to overtime, but in closing, I think we can now explain the Rishonim. You know, I don't like this whole thing that Sos has this whole pshat. Like, why didn't any of the Rishonim say it? You know, sometimes I don't know. But I think, like, maybe the pshat is, and the Rishonim think that unless something, in this case, you know, to Erez's point maybe, unless this is actually Hezek Re'iyah, it's Midah Sedom. There's no such thing here as Chaser Ktsas, and therefore not Midah Sedom. Only if it really is Hezek Re'iyah Shmei Hezek, will we say that it's not Midah Sedom. Will we say that we're not going to be Kofeyu? Because the line is so subtle and it's so critical that we understand, we don't want to take too many things away from people, but we also want them to respect the fact, you know, that people, that everybody in the world, we should share our things with people, as long as it's not causing us tremendous harm, that's something that's necessary to develop. So I think that explains the problem exactly, and certainly does justify in the end the Ritva's comment, indeed kofen amidah sedom, and for that reason, it really is above a basra sugya, because it's specifically the line between, not if you're taking something from me, but whether or not I really have the right to something. We're all acting within our rights. We all seem to be doing things ze'ose b'sof shalo, v'ze'ose b'sof shalo. But midah sedom, basically in a word, raises the question whether or not, you know, we're looking at all this the wrong way, and whether we should look ourselves in the mirror to appreciate what it really means, you know, to own things, to possess things, and how we should, you know, go about, you know, that ownership itself and the vatranut. That justifies kofin in dine maminis on amida sedom. Okay, next time we'll just pick up with Makoros that I'll send out to Erez and Moshe, and Wednesday we'll do Chanukah Shir.